Welcome back. Now it's time for a little bit of audience participation. Luke Klaas and Ivo De Decker, I hope I pronounced that correctly, will talk about some problems from the real world, and you are supposed to join in a lively discussion, right? The other thing is, the talk after this talk will not take place because the speaker couldn't attend. So if there is a lively discussion, we will have more time than usual, than planned. But at the time that this talk ends, I will give you a signal just in case you planned on joining the other track. So after the normal time of this track, I will give you a short signal just so you know when you planned on attending the other talk after this, then you have to switch tracks. So, and then I will give you the other microphone. Have fun.
Thank you. So that's my colleague Ivo, and I'm Luke. So the pronunciation was almost right. So file serving challenges at our university. The goals of this presentation, we want to share some challenges we came across. Share the solutions we found to these challenges, but also to learn about different solutions. So if you have different solutions to our challenges or other challenges you think might be relevant in our case, please be free to share them to us. And also one of the goals is to make sure we align our plans with Samba's future. And obviously that can be in both directions. That can be changing our plans, but that can also be making sure Samba changes so our plans can still hold. So maybe first a bit about the context. Ghent University has about 45,000 users. 38,000 of them are students. And all of them have Samba shares. So they have individual Samba shares, and we also provide shares that are used by more users at the same time to cooperate, to collaborate. We are working in the ICT department. The ICT department has four different sub-departments. We have user support sub-department, which is responsible for the Windows PCs and Active Directory. Then our sub-department is infrastructure, and we run all the file servers, mainly Samba. And then there are two other sub-departments, but they are less relevant for the file serving team, that are the sub-departments applications and educational technology.
Well, something that's important here is to note that the group that is running all the Windows infrastructure is completely separate from the group that's running the Unix servers, and those are also Samba servers. So there is some kind of integration, but this is really limited, and that's something that we will talk about in some of the issues we saw.
So we start with the good old days. We used Samba 2 and early Samba 3, mostly on Solaris. All of them were standalone servers where we generated SMB password files. And it just worked. What do we mean with it just worked? Like, you have the users that have Windows PCs, and they connect to our file servers. And as the credentials are the same, it just works. They don't have to re-enter their credentials or anything, it just works.
So in those days, and we're talking pre-Solaris 10, so Solaris 8 and Solaris 9, which has a whole set of issues which we're not going into, But from the Samba side, the only thing you basically had to do was install Samba, generate a Samba password file, so you just needed to have the hashes and the logins, and like Luke said, everything just worked. There was no real integration. There didn't have to be any kind of agreement or collaboration with the people running the PCs. And that's the reason we call them the good old days, because everything just worked without having to do special stuff.
So apparently a typo. What were the challenges with the old setup? One of the things was scalability. There were always, people were always using more and more data. And obviously the servers had the disks that were inside, and that's it. Then also, whenever there was a new user, obviously the user can only use the share when the password file is up to date. But the password file generating, the password file takes time, so there are delays. When he changes his password, it's not like immediately he can use his new password. It takes some time. So what did we do? We migrated to a proprietary to a NAS. So a commercial NAS device.
So it was more or less a kind of management decision that all the issues we had with the old, slow, unscalable Unix servers, which were then mainly Solaris, but that was mostly a legacy thing, all those problems would be solved by buying these nice filers from a company I'm not going to name. So we started to do a migration. And the sad thing about this is that when we were migrating away from Samba, that was one of the places where Samba really shined, because we could set up a system with DFS links, which allowed us to do the migration behind the back of most of the users. So we could just sync the share, and if they weren't logged in, we could replace the share with a DFS link. And when they would log in again, or in some cases they had to reboot, they would see the new share without even knowing that the data had migrated to some other server. The sad thing about this is that we only later realized that it's nice to go away from Samba that way, but once you're on this proprietary box, there's no way back. Well, at least no easy way. That's the first big mistake we learned about later. And also, as you can expect from such a proprietary NAS box, there isn't that much ways you can configure it. So we needed to get our users onto it, and there's no way to do that. So we had to have a domain to get all the users onto the system. So we set up a Samba domain. It was Samba 3 something, and I think it was with the Sarnet packages. And so we wanted to move away from Samba password file, so we started using LDAP, which worked reasonably well, but there were some ID map issues. And the only solution we came up with was to have a separate ID map tree in the LDAP, and then feed it with the issues, with the entries for the users, because otherwise, even though we had an LDAP tree with the correct information, IDMAP insisted on creating new entries with different user IDs for the same users, which didn't work that well. But we got around that, and so we started migrating. And I think all the shared drives, so all the all the shares that were not home drives, they were all migrated that way to a separate system. And after that, we needed to tackle the home shares. But by that time, we were convinced that the proprietary SIF server wasn't as good as the vendor promised us. So at first, we said we will move the data to the NFS on the NAS, and then we can later export it directly, which we then never did. But we kept using Samba as a front end to the users with the data actually on NFS. And there again, the way we could do the migration was just when a user was not logged in, sync the data to the NFS mount on the same server and replace the share with a symlink, and the user never noticed something was missing. So there the flexibility we have with Samba was really a nice thing.
Obviously, there were some challenges with proprietary NAS. Ivo already mentioned that at the time we moved the shares, we already saw that the SIFS implementation wasn't as good as we were used to. But there were other general things we really didn't like, and the first and foremost thing is it's really expensive. And obviously, if it's really expensive, you expect more than you're used to, but it was slow. Slower than we were used to. It was not at all flexible. It was inflexible. You could only tweak a little bit, but only what the system provided and nothing more. And well, the system didn't provide that much. It was at times it was really unstable.
We had a certain number of crashes at which the vendor always replied with explanations like, we've never seen this bug before, or this is a very unlikely problem. One of the issues in the way we were used to working is, if there's a problem with a user on a Samba share, you have logging, you can turn up the logging, you can see rather well what's happening, because usually it's not a problem on the side of the file serving. Well, it wasn't with the Samba server. But in this proprietary setup, the amount of data you can get out of it is really limited. And especially if it starts to be slow, users start complaining. And if you have no way of knowing what's going on, you can't even tell the user that it's their client which is wrong, which is sometimes the case. And obviously when it's the box itself, which scales way worse than you would expect from the price, then there's not much you can do. And also in the implementation, it's clear this particular vendor had a very narrow focus in what they implemented, and everything that was not absolutely essential in their view just didn't work. And for instance, to get it to work in the Samba domain, you had to do strange hacks in LDAP, create stuff, then join, then change it, then do something else on the filer, then change it again. There was a whole workaround you had to do just to get it to join. There were also some things that were new. These aren't mentioned on the slide, but we'll talk about them later. And one of the things that this solution had was the snapshots, or the shadow copy or previous version or whatever you want to call it, which was nice from our perspective because we could offer the users a kind of simple backup. But obviously, this is, once you have it, it's something you get used to and you want to keep for the future.
So back to sanity. So we switched to Debian Samba. Why Debian? Well, we are both Debian developers, so the choice was obvious. At that time, we version 3.2 was released, so we used 3.2. But we still used the NAS device in the backend. The NFS for the home drives. And one of the problems with using Samba on NFS in Linux at that time was quota issues. And quota issues, well, usually they're not that bad. Quota is full, and so what? But the Windows clients, as they saw that they thought that there was space enough, they kept writing even if quota was full, which obviously meant that you have corrupted files. And corruption is another thing. And we never saw that problem with Solaris, because for Solaris, the Samba was patched to take care of that. If you used Samba on Solaris with NFS backend, you didn't have the problem. But with Linux, you had the problem. And with the help of Cernet, Samba was patched, so now it works, and we don't have corruption anymore. But obviously, that was a fun problem.
But for a while, we were able to get around it with a workaround, which meant that most operations were synchronous. But the drawback of that is that it gets slower, and if your backend NAS is already slow, that's not really an ideal solution.
Yeah, it was even slower than before. And then we moved also to Samba 3.4 with ZFS. Why did we look at ZFS? Well, for snapshotting, because file system in Linux with snapshotting, well, you have some commercial options, but there are not really free options. And at the time, we didn't look at the commercial options. So ZFS, obviously on Solaris. At the time, there was no ZFS on Linux. And one of the problems we had with 3.4 was that if you used it as a standalone Samba service, where the domain of the user is the Active Directory domain, and the domain of the Samba server is something completely different, it stopped working. And the solution was that you had to add map untrusted to domain in your configuration. But that option was not available from the start. So
what I was going to say about that is that at that point we realized that there must be something in what we're doing that's non-standard, because during the development of 3.4, none of the developers realized that this was a use case that needed to be supported, because it was only later, once it was released, that users complained about it, and that this option was reintroduced, so to say, to allow this use case to continue. Also for snapshots, well, we're talking about the 3.4 period, so back then something like ButterFS didn't really exist, and it certainly wasn't stable. It's not even stable now, so. Also back then there were some initial patches for shadow copy. I think you could do it with LVM on Linux and maybe some other things, but it didn't work with Solaris and ZFS, but there were some patches which were posted to the mailing list, and we were able to just apply them, and they seemed to work with very little modification.
Obviously, one of the challenges with ZFS was, well, actually not in the start, but later on, it's on Solaris. Why is that a problem? Well, we were used to Sun, and Solaris was really well supported, was really well maintained. When Oracle took over, that was gone. So ZFS was suddenly not that nice anymore because we had some bugs and, well, they didn't get solved. They just stayed.
Even though we paid for a support contract.
Yeah, then, not so long ago, there was a nice exploit, which was a good opportunity for us to upgrade everything to Samba 3.6. And it was very interesting for our Samba 3.0 domain.
So back then, the Samba 3.0 domain was still running, and there were a number of servers in there. But some of them were set up as standalone servers, which just the LDAP backend. There wasn't really a good reason why it was that way. It just happened that way over the years. And so we started moving them. But we didn't really trust the upgrade from the Samba 3.0 domain to Samba 3.6, because that's a very big upgrade and something that's usually not that well tested. The idea was we move all the servers to standalone servers because we know that works and we'll do that one by one. And then we're only left with the proprietary NAS, which we still had and we still do today. And we can more easily contain the upgrade and check if everything is working. And so we started moving them over, but then it turned out that the way we did the LDAP tree, there was something weird in there. Apparently, with Samba 3.5, everything just worked fine. And with Samba 3.6, everything stopped working. Because all the standalone servers are their own domain, they have their own SID, but the users, which were in the LDAP tree, had a different SID, and Samba didn't like that. So we kind of worked around it by changing all the domains to all have the same SID, which is probably quite dirty, but it just works. And so we're still doing that today.
Yeah, with different names, but the same SID.
And in the end, it turned out that the upgrade of the domain controller went much better than we expected. We just set up a new one with the same data and shut down the old ones. And I don't remember if we had to rejoin the NAS, but there was no big migration or issues. And then also with, I think it was introduced in Samba 3.6, but it might be 3.5, the ID mapping was rewritten a couple of times, and in one of the recent rewrites, the ID map NSS option was introduced, and this actually finally solves our problem we had in the beginning with the hack we did in the LDAP tree, and now we're just using that, and it works fine.
So what are our current plans? So obviously move away from Solaris, move away from the NAS. And on short term, that's the NFS NAS, but on longer term, it will also be the SIFS. Move to GPFS plus CTDP. Because, well, then we have snapshotting, we have the other options we like of a good file system. But we will keep looking for a good file system, so other good file systems, because, well, we already had the experience with ZFS. That's one thing. So if IBM doesn't want to support GPFS anymore, that might be a problem. But also because, looking at other file systems might give us hints on what extra features are nice to have, and also, having general choices of maybe changing to another file system if we find a better one. So
as I already said, one of the things we can't live without is having snapshots. And that doesn't mean two or three snapshots, but I think we currently have hundreds of them for each file system, and we export them to the user. So that's a feature we really need to have, which severely limits the choice of available file systems. And it doesn't say so on the slide, but the idea is production-ready file systems. So that's even more limiting. We want some kind of scalability. Obviously, something like GPFS should, in theory, scale rather well if by adding more boxes. But it doesn't have to be that good. If it would be a setup where we have multiple servers where we can do stuff like DFS links or something like that, that might also be acceptable. But it must be better than UFS on Solaris. And for a number of the setups, we also need user quota. So for the setup with the home drives, there you need user quota. Otherwise, you need to set up way too many individual shares, and that's not realistic. For the setup with the shared drives, their user quota isn't that big a deal. And that's also why we were able to move to ZFS back in the days, because at that point, there was no user quota on ZFS. So there are a number of file systems we know about that would be nice if they would be stable, but stable ones, that's a question. Yes.
As far as I know, there's only one stable open source file system that meets your requirements, ZFS.
I think you can't get a better file system than ZFS on Solaris, so why not use Nexenta or test Nexenta storage? We just, I'm from Munich University, and we just moved to Nexenta storage. It's it's based on Open Solaris and ZFS, and it's a storage appliance. You can test it for free, and if you you can use it until 18 terabyte with community edition. If you need more, then you have to buy a license, but it's I think it's the best appliance on the market at the moment.
Well, to answer the question, why not move to ZFS? One of the reasons is actually Ira's talk, I guess it was from last year or the year before, where you described some of the issues you saw and you were able to fix because of you have people who have deep knowledge of how the Solaris kernel works. And at this point, we don't have that. And we see that kind of issues with Solaris we have from Oracle. And apparently, they don't have the people with deep knowledge of how Solaris works.
So as the person with the deep Solaris kernel experience from where I work, there might be one other. The people who have the experience you're looking for, in general, scattered out to a few companies. Nexenta is one of them, but most of them are in the Lumos community still. Most of the architects of ZFS and the big coders in ZFS are in the open source community working for various companies. I'd recommend that, I won't speak to Nexenta personally for various reasons, but there are a number of good open source alternatives to just going away from Solaris that will leave you on ZFS with fairly good support. OmniOS is one that comes to mind that a lot of people are getting recommended to them. And in fact, I was using it as a reference platform at SDC. So it's pretty good. Once again, it depends a lot on who you can find and what problem, what exact set of problems you're hitting. I don't know what problems you're hitting, so I can't comment on whether they're just fixed or whether they're still in the fixed queues or whether they're not even on anybody's radar. So.
Other people with comments on file systems?
Many universities here in Europe still use OpenFS. Then could be a solution. And in special way now there is an evolution. The name is YAR file system that introduces new features in OpenFS. But you have to pay. I don't know exactly how many features there are there. Multi-master, replication, and so on. Because you real-time replication thing. But if you need scalability, yeah. Distributed file system could be your solution. They have also, unfortunately, a dedicated client. That means you have a caching in the client that when you read from your warm cache that you reach more than 100 or 200 megabyte per second. That's, you don't have problem speed. You can reduce the traffic on the network. Everything is based on Kerberos and so on.
We had some system, the same system like you want to have with GPFS, and we had often file locking problems. Does anyone else in this room has these problems? That's what I want to know.
Well, one of the reasons we looked at GPFS is that another team in our department runs a compute cluster, and they were running GPFS, so there was some in-house knowledge. And I know that they have seen locking issues where they had to sometimes hard reboot a compute node, which was doing locks on the GPFS. So yes, we see that too.
There is an interesting experiment made with GPFS and also with Lustra. They, I think, Max Planck Institute developed a specific patch for OpenFS. They use OpenFS over GPS or Lustra. In this way, you avoid the locking because the locking is handled by OpenFS, and for some kind of reason is a little bit better, and for other reasons much worse. Depends of exactly the problem that you have in the locking. But that is an interesting part, no, that you can use as a transport. That could be an idea.
You're saying OpenAFS?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. That's what I'm sure is going to be.
That in this case, OSD. OpenAFS, OSD.
OSD.
Object data store. There's a specific version.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Can we do the snapshot in the requirement? Is that the thing when I did the OpenAFS about that I came up with?
But you are read-only copy, that is a snapshot today.
What OpenAFS?
In OpenAFS, you have a read-only copy.
Right.
But it's a snapshot.
They're maintaining 100 of these things.
Okay.
Hundreds of snapshots.
OpenAFS can do backups for volumes.
In many cases, Okay, in OpenFS you have a concept of volume. In many cases, the volume is connected to the user. Then if 100,000 or more is volume and you have need one snapshot per volume, yeah, this is common used. No, you create the read-only copy, you mount in the home user directory as a backup. In this way, the user can restore the data without call you. That's the user is able to find the data of the previous day. Otherwise, you have to dump the data in somewhere. That's you can create only one copy.
But you can only have one copy.
That's one copy. That you can create a shadow copy, but this is I remember there's a bunch of little tricks about it. It's not quite right. That's the reason why. Yes, shadow copy. I remember looking at it. I wanted to make it work. Shadow copy is for IWD and some kind. If you do the master copy, you can convert and you store on the shadow copy. But it's incomplete.
Other remarks?
How big is the file system for your home data on GPFS, do you think? Yes, because we especially how much files do you have in the home files systems? Because we had a problem that we have too much files in a file set. We can't back up the files. Because the earthing takes too long for the backup.
So not everything is in one file system, and I don't know just how big the GPFS file system currently is. Everything we talked about together is something like 100 terabyte, I think. Well, for backup, that's always one of the problems. If you want to do a full backup, then usually the storage is rather slow. In GPFS, we use some calls from GPFS, which allow you to make file listings, which goes somewhat faster than doing file system walk.
And we do file sets, so we do for every letter of the alphabet, we have another file set. So the users that start with an A are in one file set and so on. That's also interesting for backup and for migration and stuff like that.
Other remarks? One other file system I just want to mention is Ceph, which looks really promising and which we certainly will test out at some point. But currently, even the developers themselves say that the file system is not stable at all, so there's not much point in running it today.
Do you want
the people who looked at it already?
What do you want to know?
What do you want to tell?
Ceph, from my point of view, is the best file system that we have today, distributed file system. That is well designed. Unfortunately, not all the parts are implemented today. They don't have any limitation, especially reading the metadata. No, they are able to replicate the metadata. That means they can avoid conflict for deadlock. And that's very well designed. But on the other side, I think not many people are behind this project. Now they funded a company that's to support the project and so on. But is a distributed file system more for wide network, for LAN network, that you need a high speed network, that's probably work quite well. It's not for a wide network from my point of view, no long distance or something like that. And at the moment I didn't see any true distributed file system for a wide area network. That is more on inside of data center, no Lustra or GPFS, no for high performance computing. But the Chefs is very, very good. On from the design point of view, is very nice.
Okay, if there are no more remarks on this slide, then we can move on.
Migrations.
So one of the things I already mentioned, and I want to stress again, is that there's whatever you're setting up, you'll have to do migrations all the time, because there will be issues with what you're setting up, and you'll have to move to other stuff. So the one solution that you won't need to migrate away from still doesn't exist, and that's one of the nice things we found about Samba. That's it's really a nice tool to have for migrations. And there's two ways we did them, and we're still doing. One is with DFS links, where you can just replace a share with a DFS link. We also have a DFS setup where we direct all our users to, and that server is only serving DFS links to the relocation of the shares to make it easier to move things behind the back of the user. And then the second thing, if you have the data on a Unix file system, even if it's only NFS, then you can just put the Samba server in front of that and serve the data, which helps with debugging and migration. So that's actually the most interesting setup. And we found there that even a single Samba server can do quite a lot. So usually there isn't an issue with performance with the Samba server. It's usually the backend storage that's the issue. And obviously, if you have another solution, especially if it's a closed solution, it's usually very hard to do a painless migration away from that to something else.
User management. So, as we told in the beginning, we have two sub-departments that are completely separate. One operates the Windows, and we operate the Samba servers. The users are managed by our sub-department, and so we sync and from our central DB to the Active Directory. So the users are really synced, like once a day we create the users over there, well, the users that are not existing yet. But whenever there is a change of password, we set it directly in Active Directory. So that's why I said sync, because it's not a real sync, the password, because you cannot set hashes in Active Directory. And we don't keep the password, so we cannot redo it later on. And, well, it used to be quite easy to have a separate Active Directory and, well, standalone Samba servers. Has it become now a strange use case? Is it, are we supposed to move to Active Directory or to using domains or?
Just a quick note for those who just came in. If you are here to hear about support for Samba and small business, and I'm sorry, this talk has been canceled because the speaker couldn't attend. But on the bright side, we are still at a very interesting talk before about real world problems with Samba and file serving.
Thank you.
Sorry.
No problem. So actually, that are questions to the Samba team, I guess.
Are there other people who are running this way with kind of sync and having different setups, which are actually separate and run together, or?
You know, Univention does something that's very similar. They put something like a small Active Directory-like proxy in between, and so they don't set it. Yes?
We are doing the same at Sensio.
Thank you. In at Sensio, we do have the same kind of problematic where we do have Assemble4 Active Directory, which intends to be the primary directory services. But still, we do have some modules that require us to still get an open LDAP within the picture. So the main problem is about syncing the user in groups. And one way to solve it, why not the best, but I mean, it's working properly, and that's good enough for our job, is something called S4 Sync. I think tomorrow there's a talk implying, well, there is a talk implying Zentio where you're going to get the URLs if you're interested, which probably does the same thing that Univention is providing.
Which talk is that?
Let me find the name. And the talk is entitled Tambor. Challenges and experiences of the Assemble4 integration in Zentio itself.
In the morning.
Thank you.
That's the main point. No, in the past, I had a lot of companies that use a central DB or central identity management. That depends what information you have in central DB. Because sometimes you don't have only AD information. You need a central DB to keep correlated or keep the link between different identity that is handled from the same person. Now, for example, you have a user for your Windows machine, perhaps you have a whole IBM host that you have a complete different username, and so on. Then, if you are able, that's not bad idea to move a single repository based on Active Directory, but if you want to handle more resources, you have probably think on identity management, like OpenAM, OpenID, or something like that.
I don't know. That is the problem.
Well, identity management is definitely a problem we have, but we looked into it earlier on, and well, management is really not into identity management. They don't want to hear about it. We have identity management, they say. Which is not really the case, but that's the status.
We have a whole set of scripts which combine data and do all kinds of stuff in different, hard to understand steps, but we have something.
Yeah, we have something that kind of works, but there are lots of corner cases that don't work. So we have double entries and entries we have to split and things like that. Yeah, we know, but management doesn't want to know that.
But also, most of the solutions that exist, they give you a tool to do it, but they don't solve the initial problem, deciding are these two entries the same person or not, handling errors, the issues remain, you only have a tool to do it.
If you have this problem, and if you have to handle not only the Active Directory, there are a couple, not a lot, open source software that can handle this problem, and probably it's better to write scripts and so on. It's better to extend something that already have a framework with a primitive to start from scratch and so on.
I agree that the identity management would be a nice part, but you shouldn't underestimate the effort to put into this. We've had an identity management project for, 4 years now, and it's now getting to a point where the end user can see a success, and it's only a very tiny part of the identity management process is IT related. The most part is getting people to do things in a structured way and to sort out different user identities matching a natural person. So it's really a hard part, and we've got a team of, I don't know, half a dozen developers only trying to get that stuff done. So it's easy to say, and I think our university really underestimated the effort you need to put into this to do it right. And it takes a few years to really get a benefit from this management.
Well, yes, that's perfect. No, that is right. Two things. I made a lot of identity management before, and yeah, you have to use an increase approach, no, step by step. But first of all, the identity many people think that identity management can solve organization problem. That is completely wrong, and you spent years. No, if no one cares that you have a double, no entries. Yeah, this is an organizational problem. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's also, if there's a person who has two entries, the HR department will say that's not our problem, that's an IT problem. The student administration will say that's not our fault, it's an IT problem. So if you have to convince them to do big changes to their system and they don't see the point, then you're not going to do that.
Yeah, we can shut down all the servers and
we do that for consistency of data. If there's even one small fault in the data they supply us, we ignore those entries, so they're forced to fix them.
Well, we ignore some entries, and that helps, but it's not ideal. So, yeah, if you didn't interrupt before, you can still ask questions about all these things. And these are just suggestions about what we can further discuss. File systems, I think we already covered enough, but feel free if you really like to. How are users managed and synced? Well, we just talked about that, but if you have other ideas how to solve it, feel free to interrupt. If you have other ideas about how to migrate chairs or to improve backups or anything, please speak up. If not, well, thanks to the Samba team for having Samba.